Welcome to another broadcast of Timeless Esoterica on the Artist First Radio Network. All past shows are available in podcast form. Visit artistfirst.com. And now, he's an author, helicopter pilot, veteran, and the paranormal professor. Here's your host, Dr. Bruce.
All right, welcome to Timeless Esoterica on the artistfirst.com network. And tonight we have part two of our discussion with Dr. Edwin M. Young. And we had a fascinating discussion last time, and we kind of ran out of time. So I wanted to invite him back. And you can check out the his biography on the his bio on the website there. So welcome back to the program, Ed.
Well, nice to be with you again, Bruce.
Oh, well, thank you for taking the time to do this. There's been a lot of interesting things going on the past few months since we last we had our first discussion. And so I thought it'd be interesting to go over some of that, and then to go a little bit more into the space program, which I thought was interesting. And then also, maybe we'll start with because we really didn't get to talk about it much, the communication that you have, this very special communication that you have. So I don't know which order we want to go in, but I guess we can start with maybe the kind of recent stuff that's been going on, because I've been,
I'd be a little more specific.
Yeah, well, okay.
Are you talking about the circus in Washington, or are you talking about about leakage of the space program, or are you talking about...
I would say leakage of the space program, and I'll just start it with this, that... I have it on pretty good authority that there's something very serious going on, that an acceleration of disclosure, but there are forces that are trying to obfuscate. Now, as an example, and I think I shared that paper with you, and that I'm doing for MUFON. In there, I talk a little bit about. The Edward Snowden statement that just came out mysteriously, that, you know, what was it, about a month ago or so, saying that he had gone through all the NSA files and found no evidence of any alien stuff or UFO stuff, and it just sounded to me, I'd like to get your opinion, like some kind of counterintelligence obfuscation going on, And it's very suspicious that he's in Russia, and he obviously he's not going to say anything that's going to make them mad, because I don't think that's healthy to be there in Russia under their care and then say anything that they don't want you to say. But, you know, I don't know for sure. So that I thought that was kind of odd, especially as it's come after... You know, the U.S. Navy has made some disclosures, and the To the Stars Academy and Lou Elizondo and all that. So I just kind of want to get your take on the current happenings, what you think, based on what you know.
Well, first of all, I think you hit on the most important point of all this, and that is, which is truth? And which is obfuscation, and how do you use truth and obfuscation in order to keep the public spinning around in circles? I used to use an analogy years ago. There was near Stanford, there was a good bookshop in Menlo Park, the little town just north of Palo Alto, and it's called East West Books, and I would go in there every so often just to see who was publishing on what. And for instance, if somebody had a good book on auras, reading auras and the energy field around the people, I go in later on maybe over the next year or two, and I would see the proliferation of books by people who didn't know anything about these subjects, and yet there were their books on the shelves.
Right.
So what happens in that case is the bad guys, we'll just call them the bad guys, the ones who want to keep truth away from we the people,
mm-hmm.
The easiest way to make it hard for people to learn truth is to pollute the bookshelf with lots of other information that's not necessarily true or partially true, and then the odds of you picking as a neophyte, you go in up to that section of the bookstore and you want a book on auras. Well, now the odds are a lot less that you're going to pick a good book.
Right.
Now, as a result, that's a good analogy to answer what you're talking about. There are so many people out there talking about the secret space program and things related to that and disclosure. And some of them, when I listen to them, some of them have a piece of the truth, in my opinion, what mm-hmm. resonates for me. And when I say resonates, I mean all the way back to the days of channeled material when I first started to look at it when I was a teenager. When there was something truthful in the channeled material, it's the way I used to put it was it stood out in italics.
Right.
It just hit me, struck me differently, almost as if you had certain sentences and words in italics. And as a result of that, when I listen to these people, several different people talk, I first of all pick up, well, that part's right, that part's wrong. Gee, that part sounds like they're being paid to give a little bit of disinformation. And it goes on and on from there. So when you talk about how many ways there are to keep people in the dark, even when you've paid to go to a conference of so-called experts, let's say, your guess is as good as mine, but there are so many ways because the frequency of the planet is not quite up high enough yet for a lot of people, even seekers, even honest truth seekers, the frequencies, and people have not caught up to the frequency either.
Mm-hmm.
That frequency is not high enough yet that your gut signal is necessarily very strong.
Mm.
Does that make sense? What I'm trying to say. No, your radar is not really strong yet. And I'm saying that on the average. I'm not saying everybody. I'm saying
right. On
average. But we're moving in a position, in a direction where it will be impossible to lie to somebody because you'll just feel when something's not truthful, when
right. Somebody's
not speaking truth. Years ago, during the years I was at Stanford, I used to, and I give Palo Alto High School, particular teacher at Palo Alto High School, a lot of credit for this, but he had me come over to give a talk on the status of psychic phenomena at Palo Alto High School every semester. I came in sort of like a guest lecturer.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I said to the students at that time was, as we move, this was in the early 1980s, late 1970s, and I used to say to the students, there's coming a time when criminals won't be able to be criminals, because not only the way we have psychics now who work with police departments, but imagine that signal getting very strong. So that it even the policeman will easily be able to tell who did what and see in their head images and, you know, the whole thing that you see now on the TV programs where good psychics are working with police and solving murders and things like that. I used to say the kids that were coming to a point where it would be useless to try to be deceitful.
Right.
So I see a lot of that going on in the secret space program right now because there's such a desperation on the part of those who have kept it well hidden all these years. There's a lot of mechanisms being used to keep information hidden. And if it leaks out, if parts of it leak out, well, then make it like the good Aura book on the shelf, but now put 20 other books around it, so the odds of anybody figuring out which was the truthful piece of information is pretty slim.
Right. No, that makes sense. That makes sense. When I was writing this article, I read a lot of, well, I've been reading a lot about, and I know we've had this discussion before about, you know, quantum physics and quantum theory, and it seems to me that some of these folks, some of these scientists are shutting the door on any kind of tying in anything from quantum physics to you know, what's going on with aliens or with the paranormal in general, and they're just like slamming the door on that, even considering it, you know, saying that that's, I think there's one article I read that said, called it quantum quackery. And they were,
oh boy.
And they were adamant about it. I mean, they were, you know, and I started to see as I was reading through this, and obviously I'm not a scientist at, you know, I mean, you're a scientist and that's why I consult with you all the time, but I read some of this and it sounds, you know, like, this one argument was, well, we don't even understand consciousness. So how are we going to understand, we don't really understand consciousness. We don't really totally understand, you know, the quantum world. So how are we going to understand something like quantum consciousness? You know, he said it's just quackery is what it is. And I'm thinking that we do understand a lot more about consciousness, especially when we look back and see what, you know, ancient people have already understood about it, and we're kind of revisiting almost and relearning it. And there is a lot to tie in to, you know, the quantum world. And but they make it so, I think we talked about this before, where you said there's people making careers out of making it so complicated or so bizarre, or not bizarre, but you know, getting away from the basic idea, which I love the way you describe it. You know, you say that, I should really have you say it yourself, but this idea
you have to remind me what I said.
that basically matter vibrates in and out of the reality that we're living right now, you know, and this.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, and I, you know, in my channeling of this ancient alien guy that I talked to, Anzar, he said pretty much the same thing that you're saying. He used the word phasing in and out, you know.
Well, a lot of times we don't have the proper terminology.
Right.
And even in even though English may well be the most flexible, I'm not finding the right word, but useful
yeah.
language. I think many times the right word is hard to find. We still don't have a term necessarily, an agreed upon term,
right?
For something like that. There's two or three things here going on at once.
I know.
First and foremost is you have a bunch of experts running around, and let me back up a little bit. When you come out of graduate school and you start a job in industry or particularly in academia, in the sciences and in engineering, where are you at in your life? You're at a point where maybe you've just been recently married, maybe you have a little kid, first of who knows how many on the way, and so. It doesn't matter what background you come from. Once you get to the point of done with school, I'm at a job, what's the one thing on your mind? I mean, I know there are altruistic people who are into doing the right thing, but the thing that's on everybody's mind is, how do I maximize my salary?
Right, yeah.
Okay, so... You do if you can stand up in front of a microphone somewhere at a conference and badmouth psychic phenomena or something like that, and that scores you brownie points, okay, you go back and tell your department chairman and your dean, and that gets more grant money in, and you get more money. So the first thing that muddies up the waters in this whole field is the fact that people pretend that their primary goal is not their salary, but the integrity of their career.
Right.
Okay, and that couldn't be further from the truth.
Yeah.
One of my friends from a long time ago, people could even look this up. I'm going to move now to the medical field for a minute.
Yeah.
Dr. Marcy Angel, A-N-G-E-L-L. And I think it's online somewhere, but she wrote the most scathing, she was editor of the New England Journal of Medicine,
mm-hmm.
and she wrote the most scathing exit editorial when she quit the job, revealing how corrupt and how, I mean, I had been talking about this for years and years, but she just talked about how corrupt that you can't believe most of the articles, a number of them are ghost written. And well, that's just a tip of the iceberg of how the most successful people in science are often the most enterprising salesmen, manipulators. If we went back for a minute to the 1700s, 1800s of the early pioneers, in say electrical theory, like Maxwell and James Clerk Maxwell or Faraday and people like that. These people had an income from a trust fund. So when they were working, suppose you were independently wealthy, okay? You could be a ski bum. Okay, if your passion, when you had all the money in the world to live and you could do anything you wanted, if your passion was science, don't you think that's going to be pretty high integrity, what you're doing?
Oh, yeah.
You don't care anything about making more money. You're trying to get to the bottom of things and the truth. That's not true with the way modern science operates. I was asked to write. I wrote an invited article for Notre Dame magazine in January 1988 when I was at MIT, where I exposed the corruption at the most prestigious universities, the highest ranking universities, and the reason I wrote the article, and it got me fired from MIT. The reason I wrote the article was because I was so angry that you couldn't believe half of the scientific literature that you're reading, and I thought it was time to expose this degradation in, you know, somewhere somebody has to tell the truth. And I thought, well, okay, I guess it's my turn. And at the time, Notre Dame was, and I had many good friends at Notre Dame, including the longtime president, Father Theodore Hesburgh. Was good. I worked with him on the committee when Notre Dame went co-ed. It was a big deal when Notre Dame went from an all-men school to men and women. And anyway, Notre Dame was starting to go down the path of the Stanfords and the MITs and the Harvards, and I thought, oh crap, I really don't want to see this. I don't know that this is going to go on here or not, but I'm going to say, look, if you go down this path, this is how you have to operate. If you're writing papers, you're a professor, you slice the bologna as thin as you can because it's the number of papers that's important.
Right.
They don't have to have much substance to them, but your department chairman and your dean in that is counting up the beans.
Right.
And the bean counters pay you by how many papers did you get out the door?
Yeah.
So not only do they not have to have much substance, but they don't even have to have much accuracy because who are your referees? Your referees are your friends that you golf with.
Right.
In a tiny little discipline, there's only so many people working in that field, and you meet them and you're friends with them, so you scratch their back and they scratch yours. You write a stupid paper and they go, oh yeah, this is fine, publish this to the editor of the magazine,
yeah.
The technical paper, okay? So this is the state that science is in, and now with that as kind of like a thumbnail sketch of how bad things are, now let's go to your question about scientists talking about quantum this and quantum that and saying, no, this can't be true and that can't be true. Do you see where where it is just more garbage?
Yeah.
Okay, they don't have to even know what they're talking about. And if they got a lot of credentials, that only makes it worse because the average person attending the conference, the average seeking person, honestly seeking person, they're not in a position to discriminate that. They can't differentiate that. They see a bunch of credentials, and they've been taught that oh, my God, here's a high priest in the religion of science.
Right.
Okay, so I better believe him. You know, he's the high priest. He's telling me, you know, in the sermon here what's truth and what isn't.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that, without going into a lot more detail, I don't know if that helps to explain why things are so goofy and muddied up. And then you have, like I said earlier, the ones that are purposely paying out the money to those scientists, because remember now, once you've graduated, now you got a family to feed and everything, so your main focus is your salary.
Right.
So if you can come along, if somebody can come along to you and say, hey, look, you know, if you talk a little bit about this subject and that, we might be able to pad your grant, or we might be able to give you a grant in such and such a thing that you're working on, or you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, the quid pro quo is being used all over the news right now with trying to impeach Trump. That goes on all the time in science.
Yeah, yeah. So while all that is going on, there is an elite group who are trying to who know what's going on, and they provide this obfuscation to keep everybody else confused and not aware of what of the truth. So there must be hidden scientists or scientists that are working in a secret society, perhaps. I don't know what it would be, that are working on, you know, alien technology and all this other stuff that's going on while the rest of us are being spoon-fed a bunch of pablum, you know?
Yep.
That doesn't have any substance to it.
Yeah, that's right.
And those people
are watched over. I mean, listen to Corey Good or you know, a few of the other guys that have been in the secret space program, how as essentially low level grunts in the secret space program, how carefully they are watched over.
Yeah.
Okay, well, what do you think these scientists, how do you think they're watched over?
Yeah.
These people who know. And the sad thing is that by the time any of them figure out that they're never going to get out of this alive.
Yeah, that's a frightening thought.
By the time they figure that out, it's too
late. So they're basically enslaved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they were enticed into what later became enslavement because of their natural curiosity and dangling of a nice salary in front of them.
Yeah, and I do know, I'm not going to mention a name, but I do know there's probably the top level psychic in the country, and perhaps one of the top level in the world. That person's life is not their own. They are complete, and I know this, you know, not from the person himself, but from a friend of that person who worked with them, and they can't travel, they can't go anywhere without permission. Everything they do is controlled.
Yeah,
and they're being used. They're being used up.
Yeah,
which is not surprising when you think of, you know, I was in the Army for 6 years. I mean, what do we do to our people in the military? You know, we use them up. We use them up, and then when we're done with them, we just throw them away, you know, and hope that they don't figure out how the VA system works to get the help that they deserve.
Well, or doesn't work.
Or, yeah, either way. I've been pretty lucky, but, you know, there are folks who are, there's so much red tape that I think some of it is almost impossible for a person who's already sick and hurt to navigate, you know, without some special assistance, you know, to do so. It's very easy to give up, you know, with that kind of...
I'll tell you an interesting story that I've had to unpack in later years. I wasn't smart enough. I was being protected. I'm not sure which at the time. But anyway, I was very good friends when I was at Stanford with the guy who got the Nobel Prize for inventing the transistor.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Shockley, William Shockley, and his wife, Emmy, were good friends of mine. And it actually started out one day because I bumped into him. We were walking across campus, and I mentioned the electromagnetic equivalent of what I mentioned to you about matter blinks in and out of our reality.
Right, right.
And I was talking about the energy flow, the flow of energy in an electromagnetic wave that goes to zero at each point in the wavelength. And I said to him, I said, you know, there has to be another dimensional reality that these two vectors, the electric and magnetic vectors, are popped out in. They must be at maximum in that reality because the wave can't go to zero. I mean, the energy doesn't disappear and then come back unless it's gone somewhere else and come back.
Right.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Right, right. That makes sense, yeah.
That started the thing. But anyway, you may or may not be aware of and also just to say a nice thing about Shockley, if it wasn't for him standing up at my second PhD defense, if he hadn't walked into the room and all of the normal professors had to genuflect because he hadn't attended a PhD defense in a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
But he came to mine and he defended me because I had all the burden of the psychic detector work that was up on the shelf that we talked about in the last discussion.
Right.
I had all of that baggage on my back. Yeah, but anyway, so he defended me, and I thank him very much for that. He did not have to do that. But anyway, we were talking that day, and that led to dinners at his house, at their house, and other things like that. And over dinner, he would tell me certain things that I, at the time I recorded, I mean, you know, they're in my head, but I didn't catch their true significance until the work came out that I'm sure you're familiar with, and a lot of your listeners would be familiar with, about Philip Corso's book, The Day After Roswell.
Yeah.
and all of the alien technology that got homogenized and, what do you want to say, money laundered, like laundering money, it got laundered through places like Bell Labs.
Sure, yeah.
So I realized in hindsight that he was trying to tell me some things about the transistor and its history that at the time I didn't suspect there was back engineering of alien technology.
Right.
So he's a good example of someone where I bet he was constantly under surveillance. And some of the things that he told me, I now understand in hindsight, he told me them the way he did because you could never be sure who was listening and what the consequences might be.
Exactly. Well, that's, I knew who Phil Corso was, but I just recently, I had never read that book, but I'd heard about it and I knew his story, and I have read it just recently, and it is fascinating. Everything from microchips to fiber optics and all this stuff that was just integrated into the R&D in the guise of foreign technology. That yeah. was interesting. That's the term they used, I think, was, oh, yeah, we picked this up from the East Germans or whatever, you know. And
yeah,
just,
well,
yeah.
And for the average person, like I said, and I yeah. don't mean this to belittle anybody, I'm just saying the average person who maybe goes to a UFO or psychic or whatever paranormal conference, and they're listening to people talking, how are they going to differentiate these shades of symbolic talking?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, they're not in a position to, they don't have any background to work from.
Right. So there's, yeah, so they're going to miss it.
And, yeah, you're going to miss it or yeah. misrepresent it.
Yeah.
You know, then you go back home and talk to your local psychic group, and it becomes one of those, what's that game you play where you, everybody lines up and one person tells the next and the next and the next. And
yeah,
then,
telephone, I think they call it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, at the other yeah. end, you don't even recognize what you whispered in the first ear.
Sure, yeah, it gets garbled and misquoted.
But the purposeful misinformation that goes out, I have no way of estimating what percentage is, if I can say this honestly, honest disinformation, because you just don't know any better.
Right.
The scientist doesn't know any better, but their ego is too big to admit that. And how much of it is well-paid disinformation.
Right. Yeah, what do they call that? A convenient idiot, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's right. They're yeah, and in fact... In fact, I, when I was still publishing my conspiracy publication, I used to use this analogy a lot. I said, look, because we were always trying to scrape enough money. It was a miracle. It was truly a miracle every month that there turned out to be enough money to pay the printer and a meager kind of salary. The money by the end of you started working on the next month's magazine with zero money in the bank account, and at the end of the month, magically there was just enough.
Right.
But never any big grants or anything. And I said, some of my people work with me. I said, look, this is how it works. If we were printing garbage, there would be a knock at the door. And it would be, oh, I represent the Mary Jones Foundation, and we just love your work, and we'd like to give you a grant of $100,000 every 6 months if you'd be willing to accept that.
Sure.
Okay? That's the useful idiot.
Yeah.
All right? Where if you're publishing truth, really truthful stuff, guess what? You're lucky to be alive.
Yeah. You can just barely get that door open.
Yeah, and then you end up in the position like where I am now, where I gave up all my prime, I mean, I'm not griping, but I gave up all my prime earning years, most of them, to put out the truth, and now I'm 68 years old, and the question is, well, what do you live on?
Right.
It's pretty tough.
Yeah, no, it you know, and... An honest life is not necessarily a lucrative one.
Yes, yes, exactly, and it gets even worse in this field. So is it any wonder that it's easy to manipulate people with, like you said, useful idiots and
yeah.
and just well paid prostitutes?
Yeah.
Is it any wonder that you can obscurify a whole area, particularly if there's some very important truth about the true power of consciousness and the human being and elements of gifts that the human being possesses that right now may be partly dormant, if
right.
not all dormant.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to ask you this because I think I want my listeners to understand the what's at stake here, because I mean this is all I think for a lot of people, a lot of the listeners, they might have kind of, you know, listening to this show, they might have an idea already of what we're talking about, but hearing it from you, and you know, not so much from me, but from you, is very, very important for reinforcing and adding to the, you know, the credibility of the message. But to, I want to you know, not to put too fine a point on it, but who are the good guys and who are the bad guys in this thing? You know, because I was privy to some information recently, and I have my own ideas about, you know, I mean, how, I just want, you know, because you have been in tune with this for a long time, and you've channeled, and you've been in the science, you know, community, and you've done all this stuff. And so for our listeners, to help them kind of navigate this, who are the good guys and who are the bad guys in this story that we're living? Well,
you have to help me out a little bit. I'm drawing a blank because I'm not getting the question very well, or it's such a big question.
It is a big question. It is a big question. I'm sorry. It is a very big question. So let me just preface it. So I'll just give you my idea of what I think, and you tell me.
Yeah, that way I'll be able to figure out where we're going.
Yeah. So I think that there are, you know, non-human intelligences, you know, aliens, whatever you want to call them, maybe even humans from the future or some combination, that are actually trying to help, as you said, increase the frequency of us, and trying to help us.
And, oh, okay, now I understand.
And they have allies, and you know, among us, you know, people here on the planet that are trying to do good, that are living honest lives, trying to help their fellow human being. And then, in my view, versus the bad guys, who are a combination of things, you know, of human beings who are maybe, as we even almost, you know, manipulated, like we already said, you know, these convenient idiots. And then you have the more malevolent types.
Yeah,
you know,
okay,
that are driven by other forces, you know, darker forces. And
okay, yeah.
And right. And then you have extraterrestrials that are not the good guy, that are not nice, that are manipulating and that are using people. So can you tell us more about what you think about that, and how, you know, what can my listeners do? I mean, you hear some people say, well, what can I do? You know, these... They're so powerful, you know, what can I, Joe Blow, you know, whatever, what can I do?
Well, that's an extremely important question that I now understand.
Yeah, sorry.
What you're asking, and it's a complete oversight on my part to, I was addressing things from a certain level, almost walking among the trees, not going above and looking at the whole forest.
Yeah.
What we have going on right now is there's a tug of war of sorts between, we'll just say, the light and the dark.
Right.
And there are extraterrestrial, extra-dimensional ones of the light and of the dark. But the dark is an errant path that goes on, that certain souls take in their evolution, so that it's a phase, kind of like when you're a parent and you have a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And is good information being put into the heads of good people quietly all the time? Yes. But in most cases, they know to be quiet about it until the proper time.
Right.
So there will good win this? Yes, of course it will, because it's the kids don't get to run the classroom very long. This is a schoolroom, this planet.
Right.
But the way it was explained to me by one of my friends, who's at the level that he calls himself among the host of God, we're talking the level of archangels and such people, the ones that are in charge of this planet's transition right now. This planet is transitioning up in frequency, So the bad guys are still having their little hissy fit going on in different areas, but they're not going to get the win. And here's how it was set up a long time ago. And I don't know if anybody, I've never heard anybody else say this. So I'll tell you what I was told, and we can consider it, okay?
Yes.
Back at a certain point, maybe 14, 15,000 years ago, in the last cycle, in the most recent occurrence of this, you being a parent, I'm sure you can relate to this too, there comes a time when kids can get to an age where they think they know more than dad, right?
Right.
And they know, so dad, in this case being creator, says, okay, I'll tell you what, you want to prove to me that you can, that you're greater than I am. So I'll tell you what, here's a planet down here, and these people down here need some testing. There's some testing that needs to go on. So I'll tell you what, I'll give you a period of 15, 16, 17,000 years. And what's that in eternity? You know,
right.
that's an afternoon to do your thing. Okay.
Right.
And you try to take over the planet. So that's what's been going on all this time with dark energies operating through certain groups of people. You could call it overshadowment. You could call it, when you do an exorcism, I can't think of the word, the simple word for it, but you have adversarial overshadowment of people, possession. Okay.
Yeah.
You have this going on. All you got to do is look at Adam Schiff to see a case of possession, and his circus going on in Washington. And you can feel it. If your gut energy is working, you can feel that energy, that sick energy. Anyway, so we're now at the point where the experiment is over. The kids, remember in the last talk, you even had me bring this up, Mark Twain's comment about this.
Yeah.
When I was 16, I thought my dad was the stupidest person in the world. And by the time I turned 21, I couldn't believe how much he had grown. Well, related to that is Creator knows his kids, and he knows they go through a phase. So this group of kids, he says, yeah, try. Go ahead and try, because he knows the spark of God is in all of his creations, and they're not going to be able to hold the fort down. They're going to try and they're going to make some success, but they're not going to be able to. It's like trying to hold a whole bunch of tennis balls underwater. Some are going to slip up to the surface and, they're going to bob up and that, and you're just never going to be able to hold them all down there forever unless you stay there and keep holding them.
Right.
You won't. Okay, well, that's what's going on in the bigger picture right now. You have hissy fits going on as the bad guys, and what do you want to say, the higher level fourth dimensional teenagers, bad guys, whatever you want to call them, they're at a point now where they realize they're losing control of the planet, because people are getting stronger, because the frequency of the planet is going up because of where this planet is moving through space.
Yeah.
We're moving into a higher frequency area. So the last writing I did that's on my website that got me into so much trouble in terms of my health being attacked for the last 2 3/4 years now was started right after the message I put on there, and it was from Archangel Gabriel, and it was titled "Time's Up for the Bad Guys."
Right.
And the last thing they want is people reading that and seeing that they're like snowmen and we're moving into springtime.
Right, right.
They're going to melt. There's just no way around the physics of the process.
Yeah.
They're going to lose control over people because people's inner God force is getting stronger and stronger, and people are waking up. Look all over the planet where you have people rising up against evil.
Right. I think like in Hong Kong.
Yes. Yeah, like Hong Kong and even here you got yet the idiots, the bad guys don't know what else to do cuz the same thing that they used to do to hoodwink people isn't working anymore.
Yeah.
But there isn't anything else for them to do.
Yeah.
So that's the bigger picture of what's going on. So I'm glad you asked the question, because it's not hopeless at all. All you have to do is work on yourself, honing your own inner gut feeling, knowing skills, however you do that. The result of that is that's more tennis balls that are flying up to the surface from being that were previously held underwater.
Right. It's all
you're floating. So the bottom line is all's going to be fine once we're past this hissy fit segment of the cleaning up of the planet. Now Trump, in order to keep it within terminology that doesn't get to be too woo-woo, Trump calls it draining the swamp.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and we have the terminology draining the swamp of the deep state. Deep state is bad guys.
Right, right.
So that's code words in our modern media for the bad guys that are, and he is draining the swamp, and so, but it's the legion of seen and unseen forces behind him that people are going to be astonished by as they can look back on this and appreciate what's going on right now.
Well, well, thank you for clarifying that, because I think there's so many of our listeners who would like to have a better handle on what's going on, and the way you presented it there will help them. It'll help them, you know, understand and give them hope too, to not think, you know, not.
Well, that's right. And the last thing they want is for your listeners to hear what we're talking about and realize that it's all going to be well. There's no doom and gloom around the corner. But because what that does is empower the person to say, oh, well, maybe there is something I can do.
Yeah.
Do you understand? Their guides and guardian angels are working with them, and if they put out the request, what can I do to help move things forward? Well, their guides and guardian angels, that's their primary job, is working with them. So listen to okay, well, the bad guys, there aren't enough of them to deal with all these people that are waking up.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, it's interesting, just on a side note, the I think I told you I was putting out this comic book. I've always wanted to do this comic. It's a character that I've been developing since 1982 when I was in engineering school. And part of the reason I dropped out of engineering school is because I was drawing a comic strip based on this character. But anyway, I turned out okay, because I really, history is my thing anyway. But I've always been interested in science and engineering and math. But and so I'm putting out this comic book, and it just got printed, and it'll be coming out next week. But when I was doing this and it was coming to fruition, that's when I had this an intrusion from a reptilian who they've kind of been visiting me on and off the last year or so, since I, you know, been writing these books and talking about this stuff and on the air and, you know, publishing. And it was a female reptilian, and she came intruded into a very pleasant dream with my mom. My mom died in 1990, and it was a very nice dream. And this reptilian, you know, was shape shifting, and then appeared as she really is. And she was warning me, you know, telling me that she can do whatever she wants, no matter what I think, you know. And I can't help but think that that's just a kind of a feeble attempt to try to scare me off, you know, from, you know, doing the things that are important. Like this, even though it's a comic book, it's an all ages comic book, which means it's going to reach young kids and older people. And the message is, you know, in keeping with what you were saying, you know, the motto of the main character is be the light.
Yeah. You know,
be the light. Yeah, it's exactly. So simple, and it's so powerful, and it can be, you know, understood in so many different ways. And I think that they want to do anything to stop us from, you know, putting out any kind of good vibrations, any good feelings, you know. whether it's whether it's a radio broadcast, a podcast, a book, a comic book, anything that could be, you know, promote the light. I just thought it was interesting. And of course, I've had so many paranormal things happen in my life, and I know, as have you, that it didn't scare me off. You know, yeah, it was unpleasant. I'm not going to tell you it wasn't unpleasant. It was very unpleasant. But I wasn't afraid. You know, it didn't scare me off. I'm just going to do what I'm going to do, you know.
Well, that's, yeah, and I can relate to that directly. I couldn't tell you how many times in the last 2 3/4 years since January 2017, the misery I've been going through dental-wise, and I don't know which is worse, to use the joke, which is worse, the pain in my mouth or the pain in my wallet. From dental issues and related things. And I'll hear, you know, well, if you just take that message off your website, you know, well, we might, you know, let you alone.
Yeah.
And I say back, you know, no, that message is staying there because it was asked of me to bring it through from a higher being, and it's there to help people realize the physics that is going on and empower people to go, oh, okay, I don't really have to be afraid. Some of these conferences that people are talking about, oh, well, this is controlling this and this is controlling that, I feel sorry for people who think, geez, I might as well go home and dig a bomb shelter.
Right.
You know, that you forgot to empower the person that the bad guys are on their last legs and their power is weakening like a snowman melting each day as the, and people's own internal goodness is growing.
Yeah. No, I truly believe that. And that's
now at what point our frequency reaches where we have more direct intervention from good guys among what you would call ETs. Okay. That's to be decided at higher levels than you and I are at. These are people who have cleaned up plenty of planets. I've worked with them over the years. In fact, it was always the most sought after part of my publication for all the conspiracy stuff. Everybody always told me that, well, as soon as it came in the mail, first thing we did was go to your messages, to the channeled messages.
Yeah.
And these messages were very well done. And they're all on my website and in a couple books, but that are on my website. But the important thing is that they were trying to show people that you don't have to, like you said with your comic book, you told them go to hell.
Yeah.
I'm not going to back down. I'm not going to give up. Well, like you just mentioned about Hong Kong.
Yeah.
What do you think those people are saying to the bad guys?
Yeah. Oh, I know. I've told my students that I teach, my history students, that you really have to watch what's going on in Hong Kong. It's so much more important than a lot of the what people are trying to tell you is important. You know, these people are fighting for freedom, you know. And which is what we stand for. That's what that is the whole purpose of what we are here, you know. The bad guys are in trouble. That's for sure.
And as soon as we reach a certain tipping point in the draining of the swamp, to use that analogy.
Yeah.
That's why Trump is starting to educate people, or what's it, condition people, for awareness of the secret space programs, plural, and and the cleaning up of those programs for the people, because he has let out certain things. I mean, one or two that's obvious are when he said, well, I've just decided we're going to have a space force. I mean, where'd that come from, okay?
Yeah.
If you already know what's going on and where the players are moving on the field, it makes perfect sense why the quarterback throwing a forward pass down the right side of the field.
Yeah.
Okay, because he has a receiver going down. Okay,
right.
It's sort of like the more you know about what's going on, the easier it is to pick up his clues. And then at some of his rallies recently, he's mentioned about the drug companies, and he's saying, hey, we're at a point now where I don't want to wait for trials on certain, and he didn't use the word drugs. What was the word he used? I'll use the word procedures, okay?
Right.
I can't remember. Techniques, maybe. He used a very important word if you knew what he was talking about. And what he was saying is, okay, I along with the secret technologies for anti-gravity and stuff like that, I want released to the public all the hidden medical technologies that they could be using to cure cancer and regrow limbs. Look at all these kids coming back from fake wars with arms and legs shot off and that, and we have the technology to regrow arms and legs.
So
he hinted at that. He hinted, and the Rife machines, for people who understand, know who Royal Raymond Rife was and the Rife frequency machines.
Right.
And the Lakovsky generator, you know, the big coils that he had, okay, for electromagnetic means of chasing bugs out of your body.
Yeah.
And so there is stuff going on below the water. You know, I used to have a friend who years ago played water polo up at Stanford, and he said, what you see going on from the stands as a spectator above the water line is nothing compared to what's going on below the waterline.
Yeah, no, you're right.
And you're only seeing now a little bit of stuff splashing above the waterline, but there is a tremendous amount of good work by very good people, aliens and humans. Well, human alien, I don't know what to call everybody. Just good people from all over this universe. Who are here now working quietly to bring about this change back to a healthy planet.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a good note to end on, because we ran out of time again, Ed. but let's do a part three. We could do a part three, right? There's nothing saying we can't.
Sure, it'd be fine if I'm still alive then.
Oh, yeah.
I'm concerned. I've been concerned lately. Too many things happened that, you know, health-wise, so.
Yeah, well, we'll just keep you in the light.
Well, you would think that I'd have some amount of ability to do that on my own after all the years of publishing, but for some reason, this latest wave, I don't seem to be so good at it myself, and I'm very thankful for the people far and wide, friends far and wide, who have been helping with keeping me alive.
Well, I hope I'm counted as one of those, because
absolutely.
I really depend on you, Ed. So I think you're a good person, and you're helping a lot of people, and you know, I'll begin with me. You help me a lot to understand a lot of this stuff, and I know you're helping our listeners. And
that's my job.
Yeah.
And as I said to you, the first discussion we had, the first interview, you're the first person that I felt the go, a green light in my gut, the first person to do interviews with in lots of years.
Well, I appreciate that, and I'm honored by that. So
I was surprised when you first asked me, and I expected to hear the same. No, not yet.
Yeah.
And I heard, yeah, you could talk to this guy.
Oh, well, I appreciate it, and I know our listeners appreciate it. And so anyway, so we have to close it.
You have attracted a lot of good seekers of truth. And I'm thankful to be in a position to at least, you know, perhaps just add a little bit to what they're already thinking. Most people, their internal radar is telling them things, but they're just not quite sure, not quite loud, you know.
Right.
So if some of the things you and I just discussed help to reinforce ideas that are already in the listeners' minds, then they feel more empowered to go and act on those thoughts.
I'm certain they will. So I would like to thank you again, Ed, and we will we will be discussing, do another discussion here in the future. And I'd like to thank all of our listeners for tuning in to Timeless Esoterica. And we're on the every fourth Tuesday of the month with another exciting guest. And looking into the paranormal and aliens and just you name it. All esoteric topics and hidden history, of course. So until next time, I wish you all to be in the light and good night.